You want to call me a panko in the papers? Do it! None of the people that go to my fucking movies can read! Right.
Hello and welcome to another episode of History Lesson Part 2. I'm Jackson McDonald.
I'm Tyler Shipley.
And after a very long hiatus, we are finally back to finally discuss 2010's The Social Network, starring Jesse Eisenberg and Andrew Garfield, directed by David Fincher, and written by the singular, the inimitable Aaron Sorkin. As a means of introducing this episode, I will just say that I feel like I have basically been sick since the last time we recorded, and I have come to the conclusion that it is because I have been carrying this movie and my thoughts about it around with me for so long and for all that time. And I was excited to do this episode because I was really excited to talk to you about it because I really wanted to hear what you had to say about it. And at this point in my life, I was bracing for this to be another like Bong Joon-ho type episode, except with the difference being that I have a lot of respect for Bong Joon-ho and I do enjoy watching his movies, even if I do not like them maybe as much as the average person does. But I was elated and relieved to see the other day in our text messages to one another that you hated this movie every bit as much as I did, if not more. And it really gave me this sense of that what we're doing with the show is right and just and good. And that there is a reason why we did this, because you are, I think, maybe the only other person other than my wife that I know that doesn't like this movie. And that is a big reason why I wanted to talk about it, because it is, and I'll let you speak in a second. I'm sorry. I know I'm pontificating, but if you go back and look at not just the contemporary praise, but the praise that it was given back in, you know, 2020, at the end of the decade, as one of the best, most defining movies of the 2010s, I feel like I'm in an episode of The Twilight Zone every time this movie comes up. I don't know. What do you think, Tyler?
I think that I hated this movie so much that I was trying to remember why we had decided to review it, and I was getting angry at you at various stages of like even of preparing myself to watch it, because I didn't have great memories of it. My memory of, I mean, I saw it at the time and I basically forgot most of it.
Yeah.
And I was like vaguely aware that I had seen this movie, but I really couldn't have told you very many plot points. I vaguely remembered like Justin Timberlake partying. Sort of vaguely knew that Jesse Eisenberg was in it, but I couldn't have told you anything specific. I certainly did not remember the Winklevoss twins, whom we'll come back to, but once we started watching it, I just found myself kind of angry at you. And actually the saving grace for you in and our friendship was that you had already rewatched and sent me a slew of how much you hated it. So I knew that you hated it too. And so as I hated it, I was like, this is horrible. This is trash. This is garbage. Why am I going through this? And I really truly was stumped as to why we were doing it. And I think perhaps my theory, I know you said you've been sick. And my theory is that the reason it's been months since we recorded an episode is because this fucking movie has been hanging over us like an albatross.
Yeah.
You know, like we just haven't been able to shake the, I guess we got to watch that. Oh, geez. Guess we'll have to talk about it. It sucks so much. And I'm truly confused as to how it garnered critical praise then. And especially now, like I don't understand it. That's something that I hope you can explain to me, because I don't get it.
It's baffling to me too. I'm gonna offer an attempt to explain why it's so well regarded in a moment. But one thing that I wanted to return to is just that, yes, I also saw it at the time, and it's interesting to see, because I would have been 16 when it came out, I think 17. And it's always interesting to sort of see how your opinion about something changes over time, or in this case kind of comes full circle, because I remember when I saw it at the time, my taste was a lot less discerning back then, and I was a lot more, because I was a teenager or whatever, and this applied to when I was a little younger and a kid as well. I think I talked about this a little bit with like Good Night and Good Luck. There's a point that a movie can reach where it's just like, well, all the adults say it's good, and all the people that I respect say it's good. So, like, I guess it's good. But in the back of your head, you're just kind of thinking, like, I really didn't like that. Mm-hmm. Maybe I just didn't get it.
Yeah, maybe I'm the problem.
Maybe I'm the problem, yeah. And so I was never, like, vocal about disliking it, or even, like, it was just kind of like people were like, oh, it's good. And I would be like, yeah, I guess, it's kind of, it's pretty good. Like, just sort of like, I guess as a means of attempting to explain its success, it has the cadence of a good movie, if that makes sense, right?
Yeah.
Like, so, so it's sort of one of these things where it's like a, there's different versions of this. It's sort of a funny comparison to draw, I guess, but it's almost like a Marvel movie, in a weird sort of way, where like one of the good ones, like one of the better made ones, one of the ones that properly hits the beats and has something going for it, even as somebody who generally doesn't like those movies, mm-hmm. where there's a lot of flash, there's a lot of like there's a lot of stuff happening, there's a lot of movement. It looks good. It's kind of peppy, and it all kind of zings by you, and you go out and you leave the theater and you're like, that was fun. I had a fun time at the movies. And this is like that, but instead of the thing that it's trying to be being a big blockbuster comic book kind of movie, it's that for an Oscar bait movie. So if we want to talk about the things that are good about it, which, are, I would say, something that this movie has that that other movies that we've watched that have been bad that I haven't liked haven't necessarily had, is like the craft stuff that is often quite bad when the other things about the movie are bad is actually mostly quite good in this movie. Like, it's not a Boondock Saints. Right.
No.
Like,
no,
it's
no.
It's not just a completely smooth turd that just,
it's not amateurish.
No, exactly.
It's not amateurish. I mean, I think intellectually it's less than amateurish. It's juvenile and childish.
I agree.
But like, filmmaking wise, it's not amateurish. And none of the acting is atrocious. I mean, the script is abominable, but
I would argue actually, like, the acting is, and this is a testament to David Fincher, who I think is generally a pretty decent to good filmmaker, that all of the performances in this movie are credible because the things that they have to say are mostly very stupid and annoying.
Mm-hmm.
And so, credit to the actors, credit to David Fincher. Everything looks good. The pacing is good. And I think, honestly, I really do think a big part of the reason so many people were fooled into thinking this is a masterpiece is just that the Trent Reznor Atticus Ross score is fantastic.
The soundtrack does land. It still holds pretty well.
Yeah, I remember the thing that's aged the best about the movie, for sure.
I remember at the start of the movie, so after the first scene, which in and of itself is a good scene, and maybe the best scene of the film, in fact. And if the movie had ended, if there had been the opening scene where Mark Zuckerberg is dumped by his girlfriend, followed by the credit scene with the Trent Reznor soundtrack, if it ended after that, I would be like, this fucks. This is great. This is really a great scene where, you know, the sort of the archetypal nerd guy who's an asshole gets told he's not a nerd. He's an asshole. And then it cuts straight to a great jam and we're done. We're out. Like that would have been it. And I would have been satisfied. Everything after that was such trash that it ruined what could have been actually an Oscar-winning short film.
Yeah, does this movie just get worse over time? I feel like that's actually pretty much the general thrust of it. Is like it kind of starts off interesting. Maybe there's a couple of things that are sort of annoying or irritating. It maybe has some interesting observations or elements, and then but it's just a death march. Like it just
gets progressively worse. I would definitely say. It was like I remember just feeling like, opening scene great, credits scene dope. Next scene starts to be like, okay, whatever. It starts to go downhill. Once we get to the Justin Timberlake parts, it's like, man, this thing is falling apart.
Absolutely.
By the late movie, we're into some Winklevoss twin rowing scenes that serve no purpose.
So that is true. But I will say, like, this is one of the funny things about this movie is all of the parts that don't have, and this is something we're going to return to a lot. All of the parts that don't have anything to do with Aaron Sorkin, even though, especially in that case, like, there's no reason why that scene needs to be in the movie because it has nothing to do with anything. But as I was watching it, like how it was filmed, and it's got the like, I was like, I just want to watch a David Fincher movie about rowing. That would be so much better than this movie. Like,
yes,
it has nothing to do with anything. And so by that point, you're like, this is what the fuck? I don't care. This is stupid. But I watched this movie 3 times for this episode, just trying to like squeeze blood from a stone, just like trying to understand it. And by the 3rd time that I was like, this is so refreshing. Just this scene of guys rowing.
I can understand that because it's funny in a way.
Yeah.
It's funny because you're watching a boring, annoying movie where everyone is pissing you off and everything is pissing you off. And I'm just like looking at my watch like, oh, how much longer is this? God, I hate this.
Yeah.
And then there's that scene, which is funny. It's funny because it's so completely meaningless. There's absolutely zero reason to have this scene. And on reflection, it does kind of feel like someone, maybe David Fincher or someone else, was just like, can we just have like one scene where I can have some fun and do something fun here? And they do this crazy fucking pointless rowing scene. I do think the movie does get worse and worse. And then, of course, ends on maybe the worst moment in the film. Like, the worst line is the last line, which I know how much you hated it.
I can't wait. Yeah. So, let's to return to me talking about when I first saw this movie. And this is the sort of funny thing is that I think it probably goes without saying I'll expand on this more in a minute, that the problem with this movie is Aaron Sorkin. The problem with this movie is the script and the fact that it was written by the worst, most noxious, detestable screenwriter working in Hollywood. And that includes the ones that we know have committed crimes. We will talk at length about Aaron Sorkin in a minute. But my problem with this movie isn't so much that it's that it's not that it's poorly written, or that it, you know, one thing that I know you mentioned and that I do basically agree with is that you were like, part of the problem with this movie is it just makes Mark Zuckerberg too cool. Like,
yeah.
He thinks that Mark Zuckerberg is cool ultimately at the end of the day,
yeah.
Even if he's portrayed in a negative light in a lot of ways, which I would argue he isn't actually really, which a lot of people seem to think too. I don't think that, but we'll get into that in a second.
Yeah, to me, that's a really, like, that's something I really want to talk about. The incoherence of the message of the film.
Yes, yes. My problem with it isn't how it portrays Mark Zuckerberg or Facebook or the founding of it or any of that. Like, I think you could make an interesting movie about the founding of Facebook. And I even think you could make... I think you could make an interesting movie about the founding of Facebook that portrays Mark Zuckerberg in a not totally negative light. I think you could do that. I'll explain. I can explain why over the course of the movie. One of my biggest problems with this movie now, and even at the time that I saw it, is just that I think it gets basic shit wrong. Like, I don't think that this movie captures who Mark Zuckerberg is, what Facebook is, and or why Mark Zuckerberg made Facebook. And my feeling about it when I saw it at the time, at 17, Facebook was a very different thing back then. I practically grew up on Facebook. I got it in 2007. I was starting high school, and it didn't really die out as like a thing that people used for everything until after I graduated. And so for me, you know, now I go on Facebook, like if I go on Facebook at all, I'm like, this is a hell. This is the worst thing on earth. I it's like the sun. I can't look at it for too long or it will blind me.
And which is a very funny, which makes watching this movie now extremely funny. And the ways in which Zuckerberg is portrayed as this misunderstood genius, it is so fucking funny in light of the fact that Facebook is now the place where my incoherent senile relatives post memes about Justin Trudeau using 5G waves to control our minds and make us drive electric cars. Like, it's
guys in flat brimmed hats accusing their cousins of stealing their headphones. Like, that's just what it is now, right?
And also the metaverse.
And that does make a lot of this shit very funny,
Right, and sorry, and also the metaverse, which was like his big, was going to be his next big, this is Zuckerberg's new step, the metaverse, all the hype, the terrible videos, the laughably bad, look like they were from the late 1990s graphics videos of chilling in the metaverse, which within a couple years he had to completely and quietly wrap up and scuttle. The whole project is dead. Like, I mean, this guy was never a genius. This guy never had some kind of, you know, coding genius or social, you know, social psychology. Like, he's not smart. And in 2024, that's so obvious. It's so much more obvious than it would have been when the movie came out.
I think it goes without saying that I ultimately obviously agree with you. But I also think, like, to be as kind to the source material as possible, I do think that there's a way you can make, like, essentially this movie, like, the same general beats, the same general like arc, but have it actually be good and have it actually be interesting and actually tell us something about something. Before I get into that, I just wanted to finish my thought on how I felt about this when it came out, which was that, you know, back then, I really liked Facebook. I didn't like Facebook because it was Facebook. I liked Facebook because it meant that I could be with my friends when I wasn't with my friends. You know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely.
I liked the way that it, you know, it's kind of similar to maybe the void that Twitter filled for me several years ago. I liked that I could go onto it and see what my friends were up to, see what they were saying. It was really good for sharing music. And what it was really good for me at the time as a teenager, was making it easier to eliminate as much of the space in between I'm at home doing nothing and I'm out with my friends doing something as possible, mm-hmm. both mm-hmm. in the sense that it kept you connected, but also in the sense that it made it so easy to be like, oh, holy shit, there's a all ages show happening at the community center 2 blocks from my house. I'm mm-hmm. going to that. Or, oh, everybody's doing this, I'm going to go there and do that. You could mm-hmm. just, it was a, it made social connection easier, which is a hilarious thing to say now. Because mm-hmm. I mean, I don't know if people, you know, I don't know when people that are listening got Facebook or what they remember about it, but it was so vastly different 15 years ago mm-hmm. than it is now. And that isn't to say that there wasn't still bad things about it, or that it was, but it just functioned very differently from how it functions now. Mm-hmm. And so when I went and saw this movie in 2010, my feeling about it wasn't like, I wasn't like, this movie's unfair to Facebook or this movie's unfair to the people who made it. I was sort of like, yeah, they probably suck. That tracks. Like, how many people with billions of dollars don't suck? Like, even as a 17-year-old, I kind of implicitly understood that, like, CEOs and bosses were shitty. You know, I didn't have like a Marxist outlook by any means, but I just, you know, I worked a job. I hated my boss. Mm-hmm. I didn't like most of my teachers. Like, it was just like, yeah, okay, they probably suck. That makes sense. Yeah. But I just felt like the movie didn't understand the thing that it was about. It didn't understand why people used it, really. And it just seemed like all of the commentary and all of the critiques, to the extent that they even existed within the movie, were like, oh, this is a 50-year-old man who doesn't own a computer complaining about kids and their Facebook statuses or whatever. That's what it felt like. The adults who liked it felt like that, those kinds of adults. And yes, in the back of my head, I was just always kind of like, this is fucking lame. This is old people trying to understand young people shit, and they don't get it. And they're just trying to tell me to, you know, the version now of like, Zoomers, get off your fucking phone and look at the fucking sunset or whatever. And
you know what it reminded me of is like, you remember in, I think, 2018 when Zuck had to do the congressional testimony about, you know, about like the sharing of personal information, you know, and Facebook mining personal information and whatever. Mm-hmm. And I remember at the time, I mean, I already had a million reasons to think Zuckerberg was an idiot and an asshole.
Totally.
And yet, watching his testimony and watching these Congress people ask him questions, the Congress people were so clueless. They were so stupid. They asked questions that were so dumb. You know, like, if I log on to the Facebook, are you telling me that everyone's going to know the pornographic sites I've visited? Like, just the stupidest self-owning questions, all of which Zuckerberg had to sort of, you know, patiently explain, you know, like, well, no, you don't have to give your credit card when you log on to Facebook. Like, he's patiently explaining these things. And it made him sympathetic. Him. Like, how can you people be so up your own ass that you make Mark Zuckerberg look good? The guy who literally most of us don't believe is a human being.
Yes.
There's an entire corner of the internet dedicated to him being literally an alien from another planet. And somehow these Congress people managed to make him look like the smartest person in the room.
Yeah. And the alien from The Simpsons that's not an alien, that's Mr. Burns or whatever. Yeah. I think it's Mr. Burns. Yeah, that's what Zuck looks like, is the fake alien from The Simpsons. But anyways,
except that in those hearings, they made him seem like the normal one. And I feel like this movie had the vibe of being made by the same people. And populated by many of the same people. Like, when they're sitting in the – and this scene made me so mad. But the scene where they're sitting in one of the – in one of the hearings, and everyone's there, and the lawyers are there, and Zuckerberg's there, and someone's asking him a question, and he it's the scene where he looks outside and says, "It's raining. It's raining outside." And then, you know, turns around and gives a smug answer to the questions that he didn't want to answer, which is designed to make us, the audience, say, "Wow, he seemed like a petulant child, but actually he's the smart one. He's actually smarter than everyone else."
Yeah.
Yes. And I just felt like that scene was designed, like, I know that the movie was made before the congressional hearings, but it had the same vibe of like, why are we making Zuckerberg look like the smart one? He is not this smart. He does not deserve to be coming across as the smart one. But because dumb people are talking about him, they're making him come across as the smart one.
Yes. And so this gets into actually two of my big criticisms of this movie. You touched on both of them very rapidly there. And one, and this is a thing that's, I'm just going to say it and then we'll move on, because I understand that at a certain point, like, you can't, the movie is what it is, and they were making it when they were making it. And it's an error in my opinion, but it's also like, I can't be angry at a movie for not predicting the future. You know, because it's like, it's hard to predict the future. Sure. I wouldn't have been able to predict the future in 2010 either. So, you know, whatever, that's fine. But there is an element to this where it's like making a movie about Facebook in 2010 is like making a movie about the Beatles in 1964 about that's supposed to be about their entire career. Uh-huh. Right. That's not A Hard Day's Night. It's like a documentary on the cultural impact of the Beatles that comes out before Help. You know, it's just like the story's not done yet. It's not. Yeah. It hasn't even started yet. Like, the story of what Facebook is has basically nothing to do with anything that happens in this movie. And like I said, I don't want to harp on it too much because, as I mentioned before, I think you could make a good movie about this, but it is just the big dark cloud hanging over the entire thing is like, how the fuck did you make this movie in 2010? But anyways.
Well, yeah, like as an audience, as watching it now, you're waiting for anything real to happen. And nothing real happens. Nothing of consequence about Mark Zuckerberg, really, besides, I guess, like the creation, you know, of the site in the first place. But other than that, nothing of substance happens. And obviously, like that's not the fault of the film exactly, but it makes watching it super weird because you're.
And also makes it incredibly difficult to understand why so much praise has been heaped on it retroactively.
Ugh,
because I watch this movie and I'm like, this is so dated. But like.
Yeah.
You know, only 3 or 4 years ago, people were saying like, no, this is the best movie of the decade or whatever. It's just, it's crazy.
That is crazy.
But, and then the other thing is that it just gets Mark Zuckerberg all wrong, in my opinion. Like, it does not remotely come close to what Mark Zuckerberg's deal is. And I say that as a value neutral statement. Like, I don't have a problem with him being portrayed as a visionary who like made this company because he had this vision. I don't have a problem with him being portrayed as a stupid guy. I don't have a problem with him being portrayed as an asshole. I don't have a problem with him being portrayed as someone who contains multitudes. Like, I don't have a political axe to grind with the way Zuckerberg is treated nearly as much as I have like a factual axe to grind, because there is just so much shit in this movie that is just purely made up. And you see this criticism from people who don't like Mark Zuckerberg and from people who did like Mark Zuckerberg, like people who were involved in the founding of Facebook. I'll throw some sources in the episode description so that I don't get bogged down trying to read through tons of articles or whatever. But something that comes up a lot over and over again is people just being like, this is not what Zuck was like. Like,
this
he was
so
not
interesting. This is so interesting to me because, and I'll let you finish. I don't mean to cut you off, but it's so interesting to me because we both hate this movie, and we both, I think, have fundamentally, it's like we hate different things. Mm-hmm. But like I hear what you're saying. I didn't know. I don't know that much about the guy. And so that it gets him wrong isn't even close to what was bothering me, although I fully am sympathetic to that being what bothers you. And yet what bothers me is like the intrinsic, like knowing nothing about the mm-hmm, the people mm-hmm. and just like what is the purpose of this film and trying to follow, you know, if we sure. just assume these are characters, if this was fictional, what's the purpose of the film, which for me is utterly incoherent and therefore because of what it's trying to sort of sometimes say and what it ends up saying, I think deeply misogynistic and deeply harmful.
Yes. Absolutely. So, yes.
But it's funny, right? Because like we have these very, very different criticisms that are that, like how is a critically acclaimed film? My God.
Yeah. So I'm sort of burying the lead here. And when I get to it, I think it'll be like an aha moment for you and you'll realize that we actually do have the same criticism of the movie, but we're just coming at it kind of from different angles. So just to very quickly get at the heart of the Zuck thing, I did a lot of research on this movie and on him to kind of try to understand like what the deal with this movie is. And it's a funny thing where, when I initially started watching it, the factual inaccuracy of it didn't necessarily bother me that much. But the more I learned and the more I read, the more pissed off I got, because the descriptions that you get of Zuck from basically everyone who was around him at the time was this is not what he was like. He was a relatively like outgoing and gregarious guy. He had a tendency to like talk at outdoor volume. He was easily excitable. He was kind of a vibrating geek who was just like always so like the sort of vision you might have of like a tech guy who's like, I have the fucking greatest ideas or whatever. But one thing that most people seem to agree on is that for better or worse, Zuckerberg thought he was making the thing that I kind of described, a thing that would make people more connected, would, you know, democratize information or whatever, like the stupid bullshit tech bro stuff that these people think, right? And in my humble opinion, I actually think a movie about a guy who starts off trying to make, because it is basically the story of the internet, a guy who starts off trying to make a thing that's going to make it easier to share information and easier to connect with people and, you know, make information more accessible or whatever, ends up making a demonic hellscape or whatever. That's an interesting movie, in my opinion. But the thing about this movie is that it's not about Mark Zuckerberg. It's not about Facebook. It's not about Eduardo Saverin. It's not about tech. This movie is about Aaron Sorkin, as every Aaron Sorkin thing is. This movie is about a guy who sucks to be around, who's a smart ass, who's an asshole, who has trouble with women, but who's just so goddamn smart. And that's why people don't like him. That's really why people don't like him, is just because he's just so fucking goddamn smarter than everybody else. And every once in a while, he just gets to really fucking show everyone that he's the smartest guy in the room. And that's what this fucking movie is about. And it's what Aaron Sorkin's entire life is about. And, you know, the fact that Zuck is an asshole and that people don't like him is totally undercut over and over again by what a genius this movie clearly seems to think he is. And it basically ends up creating the vibe of what I would describe as basically House, if House was neither funny nor interesting nor actually intelligent and was just unprofessional and an asshole.
Yeah. Okay. So it's funny, that does connect with my criticism too. And what you're saying pisses me off in the sense that, yeah, this is sort of framed as a biopic that is meant to give us insight into the personality behind Facebook so that we might understand what it became, which, of course, is a stupid thing to have done like a few years after it was created. But even if we say generously, you know, maybe the filmmakers believed they had some insight into what it would turn into, and this is their attempt to tell us why it became what it became, to get the guy so wrong in that way, it like just does a massive disservice. And that probably does actually go a long way to explaining what for me was the biggest problem with the film, which is that the film is trying, I think that the, the way that you explain that this is about Aaron Sorkin absolutely like brings this full circle for,
sure,
for me,
yeah, yeah,
and for what my criticism is, because my criticism is that they made a film that seems on the surface like it's supposed to be about, hey, there's this tech guy, Zuckerberg. Everyone thinks he's cool because he created Facebook, but he's actually a misogynist and he's actually shitty to women. And the fact that he's a nerd doesn't serve as a blanket. It's not a justification. He can't hide behind that. He's not a genius. He's just a guy that hates women because he can't get laid and is insecure and shitty. And the first scene of the movie, this is why I said that if the movie was only the first scene, I'd like it, because the first scene does that. I think does it pretty well. It's actually a really good, and I think actually fairly, I don't know, it rings true. It feels like an authentic kind of scene.
It's one of the few cases where, and it's one of those things that gets destroyed over the course of the movie, because it's just every scene is like this. And every line of dialogue is like this, and no one fucking talks like this.
Mm-hmm.
But in the first scene, and and a little bit at the beginning of the movie when he's talking to himself, it kind of works because it's an example of, or it's a context where being pompous and being overly talky is a bad thing. But it's also presented as a bad thing.
Yes, exactly. But
the problem is that eventually you get through the entire movie, and I have a note in here somewhere where I said, isn't it crazy how Sean Parker talks exactly the same way that Mark Zuckerberg does? And isn't it crazy that every male character in this movie talks exactly the same way Mark Zuckerberg does? Like, maybe not as fast, maybe not like... maybe not as fucking smart, but just the exact same cadence and the exact same wittiness and banter. And I'm sorry to interrupt your point, but this is a thing that came up when we talked about Glass Onion, too.
Uh-huh.
I hate when people call Aaron Sorkin witty, because it's like, it's not witty if you write people saying stupid shit as a setup to someone having a snappy comeback.
Mm-hmm.
You wrote it in so that that person was stupid, so that someone else could say something like it's, you know, it's the foghorn leghorn thing from Glass Onion, where it's like, you fucking wrote the character to sound like foghorn leghorn. It's not witty for someone to point it out. It's just obvious. Anyways, I'm sorry.
No. I agree. And for me, it's like, that snappy sort of, okay, I'm an obsequious nerd thing. It works in the first scene because he could be a stand-in. He could be a stand-in for every shitty, misogynistic nerd, which there are so many now. And especially at the time that movie came out, 2010, it's right at the moment where there's this kind of, pop cultural moment of like, nerds are cool. Being nerdy is in. Everyone's a nerd. Nerd goes from a pejorative thing in the 80s to this kind of like cool thing. And it always had, there was always this kind of thing where like nerdy guys talking about how, you know, well, no, girls never like the nice guy. And, you know, I'm a little different. No, I just like to speak facts. I just like to say the fact. All of this stuff, right? That is deeply misogynistic and baked into that culture. And if you just had that first scene with Zuckerberg doing that and this girl saying, what I think is actually the best line in the movie, the one, I know I won't get it exactly right, but the one that's basically like, I'm breaking up with you. You're going to say it's because like, you know, you're a nerd and you have bad social skills, but really it's because you're an asshole.
Totally.
And that's a good line.
pretty
good.
That's
a genuinely good line. I mean, is it a little obvious? Sure. Yeah.
Sure. Well, there's a few of these. Like, that's the thing about this movie is it's lumpy. Like, it's not a smooth turd where everything is just equally shitty. Like, it's got things about it that are good. Like, there's, you know, I was joking about, like, if it doesn't have anything to do with Aaron Sorkin, it might be good. Like, there's one, like, 5-second scene where Mark Zuckerberg is watching everyone else party through a screen door. And there's no dialogue. And I was like, fuck, that's good. Like, that's what the movie should be.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Like that 5 seconds of him doing that says way more than any of the fucking dialogue in this movie does.
Yeah.
And
most of the dialogue is so painfully expository and unnecessary. Like,
really,
it's so plotting.
Only a couple of things that stand out as not being terrible, and like that's one of them. The part where he describes the importance of the relationship status, I think would be good in a movie that wasn't spamming that fucking exact type of thing over and over again. And then there was one line in this movie that, once again, I think in another movie I would think was funny, which is when the Winklevi are like talking about rowing. It's always comes back to rowing. All my favorite parts of this movie are about rowing, because it's the only thing Aaron Sorkin can write about is sports. The reason why Moneyball is his only good movie that he's done is that sports are the only thing where things actually work this way, where everyone can be pompous and corny and fucking meritocratic, because that's what sports is. But there's this part where the Winklevi are like, they're arguing over, like, it's, they're like, oh, this is too easy, like, one of us should just start rowing in the other direction. Yeah, and the other one's like, oh, well, we're genetically identical, so science says we just stay in the same place, which is like kind of funny in a different movie where, once again, just they aren't spamming that type of dialogue over and over again. But, you know, like I said, there are a couple things, like, it gestures at and things that could be interesting, but it just never really stays on any of it long enough to take you anywhere, basically.
And that's the conclusion of my main critique, which is, like, it starts out and, you know, setting aside whether Zuckerberg was really like this, it starts out with this scene that says nerd culture is, and tech bro culture, it's not just socially awkward guys who are mistreated. They are assholes. They have asshole opinions about women. They objectify women, and they treat women badly, and they are entitled, and they think that they you know, deserve women's attention, and that's at the core of this culture. That's a good point. That's a fair point. It's made a little bit heavy-handedly, but I accept that. The problem is, I don't think he actually believes it, the filmmaker and Aaron Sorkin. I don't think they actually believe it. I think they want to put that on the table as like, oh, no, I'm smart. I'm reflecting on my misogyny. Mm-hmm. And then they go on and make a misogynistic film. There is not a single female character in the movie, unless you count the one line that they give to
Erica,
Rashida Jones.
Rooney Mara.
Yes.
Oh, and Rashida Jones.
And Rashida Jones at the end, which is a dumb line, but, like, okay, as a character, she's given one line, and it's supposed to be a smart line. And Rooney Mara's character at the start. But even Rooney Mara's character, who has is the most solid woman in the film, and seems to be, I would argue, is supposed to be framed as the conscience. It's like, she is the one person here who is speaking out against misogyny. And you know what they fucking did? In the scene where Zuckerberg confronts her in a restaurant, and again, she tells him off, and I'm thinking, okay, cool, this is good. She's standing up for herself. Fuck this guy. Whatever.
Yeah.
The last thing they do, and this made me so mad I wanted to fucking throw shit, is they give her a throwaway line while Zuckerberg is walking away, where she makes fun of Facebook and calls it your video game. So what that does,
I know.
What that accomplishes in that moment is to say, this stupid girl doesn't even understand he's making Facebook. Yes. He is a genius.
Absolutely.
Who's producing Facebook, and this girl thinks it's just a video game. So that's misogynistic. You took the one female character who isn't fucking dancing and doing drugs for guys at parties, And you mm-hmm. give her a line that is designed for the audience to say, what a fucking idiot. So the movie is misogynistic. Exactly. The movie itself is misogynistic. And it celebrates Zuckerberg and it celebrates his misunderstood genius. Even though they told us at the start, hey, this is a movie about how misunderstood geniuses aren't actually geniuses. They're assholes. They're misogynists. Yeah. What the fuck?
Exactly.
What the fuck are we doing?
It constantly undercuts any point it might be trying to make.
Exactly.
And as you pointed out, like, does David Fincher think this movie is about misogyny and is showing the world the misogyny of this, you know, particular milieu? Maybe. Sorkin definitely doesn't, though. Sorkin definitely doesn't have any understanding of what he's even trying to do with a lot of this, I would argue, because this is what constantly happens. And the woman stuff in this movie is amazing, and I want to return to it in a second. But that scene you pointed out, that wasn't even the thing about it that bothered me. There's like there's another part where she goes, and this is clearly, you know, he clearly thought this was so fucking funny when he wrote it. You called me a bitch on the internet, Mark. The internet. Another line that's clearly like, this woman's stupid, you know? And if it's not, then you're just stupid. So so it's like, this movie either is doing the thing that I think it's doing, or it's just poorly written, you know? It's one of those things where you don't get a better grade because you didn't mean to present it that way.
Exactly.
If that's what I'm getting out of it. And I want to add too, by the way, that the things that we've talked about here about Zuckerberg being like cool and being a tortured genius or whatever, this is not just our thoughts and this is not us misunderstanding the movie. This was a consistent theme that came back over and over and over again. And later on, I can go in and I can go and find who the specific people were. There was a guy, Dave Knox, who's a brand management guy. And has done like a bunch of consulting and stuff. He said this movie will inspire the next generation of entrepreneurs. So like, that's one thing. So that's one takeaway from this. There's another review by that guy. He writes the blog Lefsetz Letter. I cannot remember his first name, but it's like Dave Lefsetz or somebody. He said the same thing. He was like, this movie is about how techies are the new rock stars. There was an article. Yeah, here. So this is an article in CNN by Pete Cashmore where he said that's called Why Zuckerberg Should Like the Facebook Movie. And there's if you go on the Wikipedia article for this movie, you can find people who know Mark Zuckerberg or who are sympathetic to him saying Mark shouldn't be upset at this movie because it ultimately portrays him as a like singularly driven genius. Uh-huh. So if this many people took that away from this movie, this movie was a failure. That's just my, even if it didn't mean to do that.
Yeah.
That's what people took away from it.
Exactly.
And I'm not always into this death of the author stuff. I think it's more complicated than that sometimes, but there's just so little meat on the bone here that I just think like that is the most damning evidence of it being a failure that I could possibly pull up.
Yeah.
And, people agreeing with me, essentially.
Yeah. And that's exactly what I meant about it being totally incoherent, because it's like because just as there are people who had that reaction, the one you were just describing, there's probably also a lot of critics. I imagine this is part of why the film did so well, who took away from it like, oh yeah, no, this is a interesting criticism of the misogyny that runs through, you know, this culture. And you can feel the ways in which the movie's trying to gesture back to that. I mean, this character, his ex-girlfriend, who is the only, basically the only female character of any substance. I mean, the way that they portray the other
women.
Who
is also completely made up, by the way. Yeah. I just need to throw that in there. Like,
unbelievable. This
is made up. This lady did not exist. There was a girl that from the blog post where he did the face mash thing, there was a girl that he called a bitch. And then he started doing all this stuff. But there's no, like, a lot of people have chronicled this. There's people, there was a guy who was like basically the, you know, the embedded journalist who covered all of this stuff and knew Zuck from the beginning and wrote a book about it and whatever. This ex-girlfriend that he was spurned by that made him want to create Facebook does not exist. She's made up. We know he called some lady a bitch when he made the Face Mash thing, but it's actually really not clear if Face Mash really had anything to do with him actually eventually doing Facebook and coming up with the idea for Facebook. And all contemporary evidence suggests that Mark Zuckerberg was actually already with his wife when all of this was happening.
So what we have then, to back to where you started this, is we have Aaron Sorkin rewriting the character of Mark Zuckerberg to be him, to be himself. And it becomes Aaron Sorkin is going to work through his own misogyny. He's going to point out that the his own misogynistic views and the ways that they, you know, harm his relationships with women, except that he still does that in the film. He still is misogynistic in the making and constructing of the film. So it's like, okay, this girl, this ex-girlfriend who is supposed to be the moral conscience, but actually, you know, he writes her to be smug and arrogant and wrong and not understanding Mark Zuckerberg. But then at the end, the last thing we see is poor Mark he's actually lonely and he's looking her up. He adds her on Facebook because he's lonely.
And even at the time, I fucking hated the end of this movie so much.
It's like, what is he trying to say? And again, like the incoherence of it, it's like, are you trying to come back to a point that he's actually a misogynist and what really bothers him is that he can't get this girl to like him? If so, make that point, make it properly, don't make a misogynistic movie about it. On the other hand, are you trying to say the poor guy, he deserves to have, like, what are you trying to say here, Aaron Sorkin?
Well, the thing that really bothers me is the line that Rashida Jones has, where she says, you're not an asshole, you're just trying really hard to convince everyone that you are, or something like that. And I had an argument with someone recently where they were like, do you think this movie is endorsing, like, Mark Zuckerberg and what happens? And my feeling about it was like, no, it's worse than that. It's not endorsing what Mark Zuckerberg does or what he did or what he does over the course of this movie or his actions. It's endorsing who he is, which is a genius, which is a guy who, you know, who's an asshole to women and who fucks over his friend or whatever, who very, very disappointingly only gets to be the 85th richest guy in the world and not the 8th richest guy in the world like Mark Zuckerberg is, which is like a funny detail that never comes out of this. And that's the other thing, too. Like Andrew Garfield's really doing his best with this role, but something that you also can't really dance around at all is that, like, this is the guy you're supposed to feel sympathetic to, and he is every bit as misogynistic as Mark Zuckerberg is in this movie. There's a scene early in the movie where he's talking about Asian girls that, like, I do not understand how this movie is not canceled now.
No kidding.
Like, it's just, and again, it's like,
I have an answer to that, which is that I think people wanted to believe that stuff was critical. People watched the movie and wanted to believe that, oh, this is a critical portrayal. This is, yes, this character's doing some racism. And that's because we need to understand that there's still racism in the world. And that that even at Harvard University, there's still some racism. Like, but then here's the incoherence of it. They take the guy who says the racist thing and then make him, like, one of the good guys.
The good guy of the movie. What? The guy you're supposed to sympathize with. Yeah, exactly.
This film is, on the one hand, I think, supposed to be telling us, like, oh, you know, you think that Harvard is filled with really great, upstanding people, but actually, you know, it's quite shady and there's some quite strange things. Look at these weird rituals and hazing that they do. And yet, they also basically tell us that Harvard is amazing and it rocks and it's and these things are cool. And look at how cool Rowing Club is. And like the film doesn't know if it's criticizing this stuff or celebrating it. And at no point does it give us any clarity on that. It just shows us these things. And at the end, and this comes back to what you said about the last line, at the very end, they basically say, well, you know, I don't know if it's right or wrong, but I know that people have good hearts.
Like, yeah. Right? Yeah, exactly.
That's like what the last line
means. It's
just
sort of it's a classic to me, like stupid guys' understanding of the world or stupid guys' like point that he would make with a movie, which is to basically be like, well, we show a guy doing something good, but then we show him doing something bad. And then we go like, wow, the duality of man, like who's to say? And it's like, fucking shut up. Who cares? Like, that's not interesting. Like,
it just goes to show you never know what's going to happen.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's funny. So the one saving grace of this movie is that it made me watch Citizen Kane. Because through like a very long web of like different, you know, reasons or whatever, I knew we had to do this movie. I wanted to watch some other David Fincher movies to kind of get a sense of how I feel about the guy. I feel very similar, I guess, about David Fincher as I do about Christopher Nolan. He's pretty good for the most part at making movies that are slick and watchable, but I don't think he's ever really made a masterpiece. I don't even know if he's really can even consistently get above like a 3.5 out of 5, mm-hmm. but I get why people like him, and that's
sure.
fine. Yeah. I tried to watch Mank. I got to the scene where Mank describes socialism as sharing the wealth and communism as sharing the poverty, and I tapped out. I couldn't do it anymore.
Thank you.
But I will give it. I will say that it is interesting, at least, to portray Herman J. Mankiewicz as being inspired to write Citizen Kane because of his guilt over kind of being semi-responsible for the failure of the Upton Sinclair campaign in California. That is at least an interesting like nugget, an interesting idea. I don't know if it is a movie, but it's at least something.
Mm-hmm.
But that made me, I was like, I'm going to watch Mank, but if I'm going to watch it, I better watch Citizen Kane again. Because when I watched it, I was fucking high out of my gourd and I didn't get anything out of it. And Citizen Kane, unlike this movie, absolutely deserving of every bit of praise that it's ever gotten. And it's like status as one of the best movies of all time. But there's I was reading a lot about that movie, and there's like an apocryphal, possibly apocryphal, story that Gore Vidal said that Rosebud, the like, you know, central thing in the movie. I don't want to spoil an 80-year-old movie for people who haven't seen it, but his last word that you don't find out what it means until the very end of the movie. There was an apocryphal possibly story that Gore Vidal said that's what William Randolph Hearst called his wife's clitoris. And this movie is basically that. Like, if that was actually what the movie was about. It's like, oh, what's the rosebud of Mark Zuckerberg's life? It's that he can't get laid. Like, and I just find that like, I understand it. And I think if the movie, I don't know, I guess did a better job of what it was trying to say, then I might have some, but it is once again, like a giant albatross around this movie's neck that it doesn't really seem like that's true. Like it doesn't really, if you look at the facts and the evidence, it just doesn't really seem like that's actually what happened here. And it's once again, just consistently undercut by the fact that ultimately you're still supposed to feel sympathetic for most of these guys, except for Sean Parker, who ironically, I think is actually probably the most sympathetic guy involved in the founding of Facebook, the only guy involved in the founding of Facebook who actually was smart, like actually was very, very high levels of intelligence and actually did do something interesting and cool, which is invent a way for you to steal music.
Yeah.
You know, like,
say, yeah, I was going to say, of all these things, Napster actually kind of was cool. And yeah. It is funny that, I mean, and again, I didn't know, I don't and didn't know anything about the actual people.
Sure.
So I was watching them as characters, right? As if they were sort of fictional characters, with the exception of Zuckerberg. I don't know that much about him. I know that he's not as cool as they made him seem, but
yeah.
But for me, it's like, I wouldn't care. I don't care about Mark Zuckerberg, and I wouldn't care if they made a biopic that was not accurate to his life. If they made a biopic that was, that changed the details of his life in order to tell an important story about the way that nerd and tech culture is deeply baked in misogyny, I would be totally okay with that. What I hate is that they did a bait and switch, basically, where they were like, hey, are you interested in a movie that is about how nerd and tech bro culture is misogynistic? Cool. Come on in. Here's some Trent Reznor music. And now here's 2 hours of like boredom, tedium, and misogyny. Like, that's what the movie did. And it just, I wouldn't mind the fictionalization of Zuckerberg and these other guys' lives if it was for a useful purpose.
Mm-hmm.
But it's so useless. It's less than useless. It's just totally incoherent.
So this brings me to, I want to, I think we've done a fairly good job of talking about what we dislike about this movie on a macro level. I want to get a little bit more micro with a couple of just like, basically I'm just going to go through some of my notes and just pick some of the greatest hits of like, stupid moments in this movie that made me either like get extremely mad or laugh my ass off. But before I do that, I do just very quickly want to read from a brilliant article about Aaron Sorkin's awful fucking HBO show that I have somehow seen every episode of, The Newsroom, starring Jeff Daniels, about basically, it's basically The West Wing, but instead of the president, it's Keith Olbermann and the fucking news.
Oof.
And it is one of the biggest pieces of shit I've ever seen in my life. Like, as much as we've complained about this movie, I would rather watch 12 seasons of this movie than watch The Newsroom again. It is truly a vile experience. So this is an article that was published in Salon in 2012 by Alex Perrine, who's a great writer. Titled Aaron Sorkin Versus Reality. And I'm going to read from it because I think it just explains what is so irritating about his writing style better than I could on my own. So just starting off here, he has a limited bag of tricks. Even his sparkling banter is one note. His characters always say exactly precisely what they mean at all times. There's no subtext, no irony, nothing ever left unspoken in his dialogue. His characters don't even get to be sarcastic without someone asking them if they're being sarcastic. Everyone alternates between speechifying, quipping, and dumbly setting up other people's quips. It's exhausting. The guy can write a memorable line, but he repeats himself so much that you start to wish he'd maybe allow some of the other writers on his shows to write something. His work also gets things deeply, pointlessly wrong. No big deal in a purely fictional universe, but dodgy when dealing with real events or, in the case of The Social Network, engaging in the biography of a man still living. Sorkin fit the broad details of Mark Zuckerberg's life and Facebook's founding into the only sort of story he is interested in and able to tell. It's well and good to say Sorkin's sole responsibility is to entertain, but I think an obnoxious little Sorkin analog character would probably look askance at some Hollywood screenwriter who took such liberties with the truth in the service of disposable entertainment.
Mm-hmm.
On the other hand, the moral responsibilities of an artist dealing with real-world material is maybe the sort of question too thorny for Sorkin's paper-thin characters to dispense with in a quick Act 3 speech. And I think that really does completely sum up this thing that we've talked about before in previous episodes, where it's like you can see the hand of the filmmaker or the hand of the screenwriter so obviously in everything that's happening.
Mm-hmm.
And not in the service of anything interesting.
No.
You know? Like, because there are other guys we've talked about, like Tarantino, his hands everywhere, always, at all times. Mm-hmm. He cannot get his hands off the fucking movie for even a second. But at least when he does it, it's so like some guy can get his dick shot off or something. Like, it's like doing something, you know? Uh-huh. Like, there are things happening. The dialogue is actually memorable or mm-hmm. funny. Mm-hmm. And so that just brings me to a few things that I would love to get your comment on as well. But that, you know, I'll just sort of do like a top five or top 10, depending on how many I have here, sort of like hilariously annoying moments in the script in particular, which starts with so when they're doing these the movie is sort of framed partly like some of it is it's not always clear where the narrating is supposed to come from, and this is another thing where like comparing it to Citizen Kane, like with Citizen Kane it's always so clear whose version of the story you're getting. In this movie it's like it starts with just an omniscient like Mark Zuckerberg doing these things, and then it starts to cut in these court deposition, or I guess they're it's pre-court or whatever, but these like, you know, these lawsuit things, and it's like sometimes it seems like someone's narrating it, and then other times it's not clear if it's just like supposed to be omniscient or not.
Yeah, it's so shoddy. It's just so shoddy.
It really is, yeah. But there's a part where they're talking about him making face mash, I guess. And somebody, I think it's Eduardo, but it could be someone else, says he was blogging simultaneously. Like, and the fucking weight that is given to that line is like they're talking about Shohei Ohtani. Like, this guy can blog and make a website at the same time.
Yeah.
And which once again is just like, this is fucking like Aaron Sorkin wrote this on a typewriter. Yeah. He didn't own a computer at the time that he was fucking doing this. Like,
yeah, yeah. No, that's 100% those Congress people being like, now do you mean to tell me that if I give the Facebook my password, it's going to get into my bank account? Like, yeah, just this incredibly out of touch. I mean, you don't have to be a computer genius to understand that blogging is just typing out some thoughts.
Like, yeah.
It's not coding. It's not fucking doing nuclear physics. It's just writing.
No, and
hey,
it's like,
what's up?
It probably takes time for shit to load. And so while shit's loading,
he's like,
and this is what I was thinking about at the time. Like,
yeah.
I don't know. Like, I mean, it's not, I'm not trying to make the point that it's like, not, you know, like, yeah, sure. It probably takes a lot of acumen with, you know, whatever he was doing to be able to go that back and forth very easily between like writing out your thoughts on it and doing the actual thing. I'm not saying it's not, impressive isn't even the right word, but like,
yeah.
I'm not saying it's like, oh, well, anyone could do that. I'm just saying like,
it's not the hallmark of a genius.
You're making it fucking sound like Shohei Ohtani leading the league in, you know, ERA and home runs at the same time. Like, it's not that fucking impressive, you know?
No.
So
no.
This is followed up almost immediately with this is just a really small thing, but the Winklevi saying they want to, or maybe their other buddy or whatever, saying they want to hire the Sopranos to hit him in the head with a hammer or something. Uh-huh. And it's just like, I don't know why that bothered me so much. But
I know.
Just like get
that word out of your mouths.
Yeah. And just the way that they say it too, like, not I want to hire Tony Soprano.
Yeah.
I want to hire the Soprano. So it's like, so you want to hire Tony and AJ and Carmella and Melody. Yeah. I don't know. Like, it's like saying like, it's got a very like, thinking Pink Floyd is one of the guys in Pink Floyd vibes to it. You know what I mean? Like, and then my absolute favorite, like I was screaming at the TV, in anger moment is when they're doing the court deposition thing, and they ask why he didn't ask the Winklevi to invest money in Facebook and instead asked Eduardo, which, you know, it is worth saying too. The Winklevi could be excised from this movie entirely. There's really completely zero point in any of it.
Yeah.
The only real reason that they're there, I would argue, is to provide like a level of relief from everything else.
Yeah.
Because like none of their stuff is good. It's like simultaneously the best and worst stuff in the movie, because it's the worst because it's pointless and it has nothing to do with anything. But it is at least kind of like, there, I wouldn't describe it as funny, but it's almost funny.
It's
because
an attempt
they're so
at humor. Yeah.
Yeah. And you know, the performances are credible, and it's like with funnier dialogue, some of this could have really crackled.
Yeah.
Because they are like a good target
yeah.
as these like stuffy Harvard guys or whatever.
Yeah. Yeah.
But it just never really works out, and it also makes the mistake of making Larry Summers appear like the most human guy in the movie, which is a war crime, basically.
Yeah.
But there's a scene almost just moments later where, yeah, they ask him about why did you get Eduardo to invest instead of these guys? And he goes, you know, because Eduardo was my best friend. And then the guy goes, well, your best friend is suing you for $600 million. And then literally the next scene, within two lines of dialogue, like they say like less than 30 words, there's a very quick back and forth, and then the guy refers to Eduardo Saverin as Eduardo. Eduardo's counsel says, please call him Mr. Saverin. And then the guy goes, well, it's fine, they're best friends. And then the other person goes, not anymore. And it's like, fuck you.
Yeah,
like, show don't tell.
Yeah,
Jesus Christ,
how dumb do you think we are?
You barely didn't tell by having him be like, well, your best friend is suing you, which is like almost barely counts as showing and not telling.
Yeah.
And then the very basically next line of dialogue is, oh, by the way, did you get that they're not friends anymore? And this comes up like a few more times where the movie is just banging you over the head like, hey, did you know that these guys aren't friends anymore? Like, yes, Jesus Christ.
It's like the songs that I wrote when I was like 16.
Yeah.
And I was exploring songwriting, and it was like, okay, I really don't want anyone to misunderstand, you know, that I feel lonely. So I'm going to say it a couple more times in different ways. Like, it's so juvenile. It's so childlike. It's just, you know, and it's funny because with all the accolades, the big names involved, I wasn't prepared for how amateurish the whole thing feels. I was expecting to be annoyed by the movie in many ways. But I was expecting it to be fairly slick, and it's shockingly amateurish, particularly in the script writing. Like, it's shockingly amateurish.
And I think that's the thing that I was sort of getting at by describing it as lumpy is like, the fact that the performances are reasonably like are quite credible, and the music is good, and the camera work is good, really makes how bad the script is shine to me. Like,
yeah,
it really makes it stand out in a way that if the whole movie was just kind of amateurish, it would just feel mind numbing.
Yeah,
but this is like the things that are stupid really punch you in the face with how stupid they are, and like,
yeah, they're out of place.
This brings me back to another thing that I think is so funny about this movie that I forgot to say when you were talking about the scene where he's talking to Erica in the restaurant, is she says something along the lines of, and once again, it's one of the better lines in the movie. She says like something along the lines of, you behave as though like it would be a crime if every thought you ever had wasn't published somewhere, or didn't, you know, you didn't put it out there in the world or whatever. Obviously more succinct than I'm putting it. And I'll attach that to another thing that happens in the scene that I was just describing, where he says, you know, your friend's suing you. And he says, I didn't know that. Tell me more. And it's like, these are thoughts that I am having as the audience. Is like, this is what stands in for witty dialogue, is yeah. like for you to tell my thoughts to me by which being is so, like,
which is so embarrassing because it's like,
it is,
buddy, you're the one that wrote this. Why are you badly having one of your characters make fun of the script you wrote? You could have just not written that line, and then you wouldn't need your character to make fun of that line badly.
Right? Okay. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it is again, that hand of the screenwriter thing of like, if you write something bad and then have a character call attention to it being bad, it's still bad.
You could just edit it. You could just edit the line. Yeah, you could just
make it better. Yeah.
Write a better script.
Okay, this is one of those. This is, I'm going to play a quick game where I'll only do this a couple times, but I'll just read you the note that I have about it, and you can see if you remember what I'm talking about okay. or know what I'm talking about. So this next one here is, for fuck's sake, Bosnia has roads. Do you remember that?
I remember
it's Rashida Jones.
Uh-huh.
And they're in he's alone in the room on his laptop or whatever, about to it takes a long time over the course of the movie, but it's like he's in the room where he will eventually do the rosebud thing of asking uh-huh. his girlfriend to be his friend on Facebook. And Rashida Jones asks him, oh, what are you doing? And he says, oh, I'm checking in on Bosnia. And she says, oh, Bosnia, they don't have roads, but they have Facebook. And I was like, what?
Yeah, shut you're up. Right. Oh, my God.
That's
oh,
so
my
fucking
God.
Stupid. Jesus Christ.
I can't believe I haven't yelled about that one already. Oh,
yeah. Yeah, I'm surprised that didn't stick with you. Because
it's late.
Like,
it's late in the movie, so I was already so beaten down and weathered.
Having
that
a hard time paying attention yeah, at that
exactly.
point, probably. Yeah.
Oh, God. That is just...
Tell me, Tyler, what is... You know, this is supposed to be about 2007, I think, or...
Yeah, no, road technology. Road technology has not reached,
did Bosnia have roads in 2007? I think they did. I'm gonna say that I think a country in, like, Eastern Europe and not, you know, in the mountains of Afghanistan...
And that's supposed to be one of our smart characters.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's not
exactly.
That's not one of the dumbass twins, where if you put that line in one of the dumbass twins, it would be like, okay, well, it's not very funny, but I get it. It's like, this is because they're dumb. But no, that line is spoken by one of the, in fact, someone who is supposed to deliver the poignant closing message. Ugh, what a turd.
Honestly, this just entire run of notes I think is funny, so I'm just gonna read them off one at a time. First is, quote, I just slept with Sean Parker. I do think it's very funny, the idea that someone would know Sean Parker by name.
No kidding. Like, I have never ever heard, and at the time never heard.
No.
If you had said the Napster guy, maybe.
Oh, definitely. Maybe. That would be credible.
Sure, sure.
The thing of her being like, wait a minute. You're the Napster guy?
Yeah.
I just slept with the Napster guy? That totally makes sense.
Yeah.
But no, like, to know him by name, it's very classic Aaron Sorkin thing of, like, thinking that everyone, like, you know, in Aaron Sorkin's universe, everyone is pulling from the same cultural reference pool mm-hmm. as Aaron Sorkin.
Yeah.
Which is
we
always
all
very
know
annoying.
All the writers at the New York Times on a first name basis.
I'll see if you remember this one. Aaron Sorkin thinks women are so dumb they'll die if they get out of the shower too fast.
okay. This is not related to the one where she tries to burn down Eduardo's apartment, right?
It's not. Well, okay. We can talk about that in a second.
Because, oh my God, yeah. Okay, no, so, this would be the same scene. This would be the Sean Parker scene in her apartment.
When he yells that, because he's trying to get her attention, he yells that there's a snake. I'm being slightly unfair, because what he actually thinks is that women are too stupid to come up with a reason why it was dangerous for her to run out of the shower.
Yeah, yeah.
But she does. She's like, I could have died by falling, by getting out too fast. And then she's like, the subtext is, I'm realizing as I'm saying this that I'm being a stupid bitch, so yeah. I'll just stop.
It's actually, it's incredible, right? This is another moment where, like, these female characters are written to be so fucking dumb clued out. And you're supposed to, at some level, they're supposed to be this mirror upon which the tech bros are going to be reflected. And we're going to, through them, we're going to see that the tech bros are actually pretty shitty. And yet he cannot stop himself from saying, these bitches are dumb. He just cannot stop himself.
Not a single woman in this movie is as smart as the dumbest male characters.
Exactly.
In the movie,
exactly.
Like, with the exception of maybe the Winklevosses,
yeah.
And maybe and then a couple of like male characters that have one line.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So the next one is, Facebook is so amazing that if you look at it for 5 seconds, you have to immediately contact the guy who made it. this is apparently more or less a real thing that happened, just the way it's portrayed in the movie is like, he looks at a single Facebook profile and is like,
yeah,
get me Mark Facebook.
Yeah.
Right now, like J. Jonas Jameson looking for pictures of Spider-Man. Like,
it's like your eyes can't even process the screen fast enough for you to formulate the thought that this is the most ingenious website that's going to transform our society. There's no way.
This one, I don't even know what the context, I don't even remember what the context for this one was, but Sean Parker founded Napster at 19. I don't care. Shut up. There's another moment where Eduardo Saverin, who clearly has an axe to grind with Sean Parker, is describing like meeting Sean Parker, and he says he set a land speed record for talking. And it's like, buddy, do you know what movie you're in?
Yeah, no kidding.
You just spent like almost all the movie being best friends with Mark Zuckerberg.
Exactly.
And you're like, man, have you noticed that this guy talks a lot?
Ugh.
Shut up.
Yeah.
Fuck.
God.
Ah! Oh, do you remember the woman character who is in this movie for one scene? And she exists only to be unable to catch a beer that Mark Zuckerberg tosses to her.
Oh, God.
That
yes.
fucking rocked. Oh. That was so funny.
Unbelievable.
Like at that moment, I was actually like, this is genuinely impressive how much you've been able to sneak into this movie. Because there's no reason why that needs to be in there.
No.
At all.
No.
Like, it's just like you put this woman in the movie for one scene to make fun of her.
Yeah.
For no reason. It rocks, actually. It's pretty impressive.
It is. Like, it's just, and it's incredible to be that clued out that you're going to be showing your ass as a misogynist when you tried to set this film up as like, oh, I'm going to be critical of misogyny. And then you, like, again, I have to think at some level that some of these scenes were included to say that the tech bros are the misogynists and look at how they treat these women, except that you, the filmmaker, did it. You made the women dumb consistently. Yeah. Why?
Okay. I have one more thing. And then I have a thing I kind of want to close on. We got to talk about, Eduardo Saverin's girlfriend. Because
she is
probably the woman who is featured the most in the movie, I want to say. I mean, she's consistent.
She's strangely consistent despite having almost no lines.
Yeah, it's kind of a three-horse race, like her, Rashida Jones, and Rooney Mara, right? Mm-hmm. Like, they're all kind of in it equally. But like you said, like, she's the one who appears the most consistently throughout the movie. Like,
mm-hmm.
She's the one who's like, in a weird sense, like, she's in the background a lot.
Yes.
She's in the action, and she's the only like active participant in the movie.
She's consistently there. Yeah. Like, she's there when they meet Sean Parker. She's there at a party. Like, she's consistently just in scenes doing nothing but being there.
Yes. And she's there when they basically start doing this whole like, okay, we're making Facebook. Like, here's how we're going to do. Here's all the stuff. Here's what your job is. Here's what your job is. And then her and another Asian girl who has no lines, who's in, you know, just kind of there as her sidekick, basically. She's sitting there next to her. And then she says, like, is there anything we can do to help? And they just kind of like stare at her blankly. And this is her role in the movie, is to be stupid.
Yeah.
And crazy, basically.
And crazy. Yeah, well, that's the surprise. The surprise bit is the crazy. Because,
yes,
you know, I'm watching this movie and, you know, increasingly getting angry because every girl they portray is just like, you know, it's all basically... I mean, it felt like he just kept saying, girls are all dumb bitches and sluts, hey?
And, yeah, and it you're really supposed does come to, across right? that way.
And you're supposed to be kind of like... And you know, because from that first scene, you know that that's... you're not supposed to agree with that. And yet he keeps telling, it's so confused. And so she's set up to be like, yeah, just a dumb bitch, just a dumb slut. And then suddenly, out of nowhere, it's like he reached into his bag of misogynistic tricks and was like, what else can I say about women? What else do I hate about women? Oh yeah, they're all so crazy. Like, out of nowhere, yes, she goes from being a non-character who has no personality, shows no signs of being crazy because she shows no signs of being anything, and suddenly she's burning apartments down.
One thing that makes her seem kind of crazy is ravenously sucking Andrew Garfield's dick. Because he made Facebook before Facebook anyone knew what it was. That was pretty... That was probably came across as a little crazy, I would say.
Grant you.
But not for the reason that the movie would think that it's crazy.
No, no.
And yeah, she apparently that woman did exist. Like, I think set fire to a present he gave her, but in her own dorm room after they broke up, which I think is very different still from what is portrayed
too.
In the movie. Like, I think that is... Because it's clear that from the real story, I mean, assuming it's even true in the first place, which, you know, is dubious considering it's coming from that book, which is, you know, dubious in terms of its events and its descriptions of events at best. It's very clear to me what happened, which is like she was distraught. They're still pretty young. And she ceremoniously, I think a lot of people remember doing something where they ceremoniously destroyed something that used to be important to them. For what I used to do, and this is not related to relationships at all, but me and my friends every year at the end of the school year there was a fire pit in my backyard, and we used to ceremoniously take all our schoolwork from the year and burn it in the fire pit and have like a bonfire party or whatever. You know, so it's one of those things where it's like, yeah, she probably shouldn't have done it in her dorm room or whatever, but it's not like, wow, crazy woman shit. It's like,
yeah,
it's distraught, spurned partnership,
and
you
it's
know?
And, like, and several steps away from sociopath. I'm going to burn you a lot. I'm going to burn your home down. I'm going to like. Help me out here, Jackson. Was there any plot related purpose served by the scene where Andrew Garfield's girlfriend tries to burn down the apartment? Because my recollection is just that Andrew Garfield is undecided about whether he's going to stay involved or not be involved in Facebook, and is he getting cut out or not, and is getting a phone call, and he's having a phone call with Mark Zuckerberg, which just coincides with his crazy girlfriend burning his house down. But why? To what end? For the purpose of the story, what is served by the portrayal of the girl burning down the apartment? Am I forgetting something, or?
The best case I guess I could make, being as generous as possible, is that it's trying to kind of present Eduardo as basically the goofus to Sean Parker's Gallant.
Okay.
Where it's like, oh, everything's going wrong for this guy, not just at the company, but also in his personal life, because he's got this crazy girlfriend or whatever.
Right.
Now, it still doesn't need to be there.
It doesn't need to be there, yeah.
Right? Even if that's the case, it still doesn't need to be there. But
could have written a scene where she tells him off for being a misogynist, maybe. But no, instead it's she's crazy. Crazy women, you know? This is what women do.
Because she thinks that relationship statuses matter.
Yeah, that's right.
That a slut would, that's her and his words, not mine, I just want to add.
Yeah.
Wouldn't care about a relationship status anyway. Like, and this is the thing about the woman stuff in this movie. Aaron Sorkin has made the case that, well, he's just depicting misogyny because this was a very misogynistic environment. And I'm sure that people who would defend this movie would say the same thing. And I will say that I cannot separate this movie from my priors on Aaron Sorkin, even though at the time when I saw it for the first time around, I didn't know who Aaron Sorkin was. So I will cop to Sorkin's other projects and his public persona seeping into my opinion on this movie a little bit, for sure. I'm guilty of that. But even without knowing any of that, the misogyny that is in this movie is just simply too gleeful to come across as anything less than at least a tacit endorsement of it.
Yeah. And it's gleeful in certain moments. Like, we see the tech bros being misogynistic and it's portrayed kind of gleefully. But then it's, for me, what's the real tell is the ways in which it's not, I mean, a tech bro didn't write the script of this movie. Aaron Sorkin wrote the script and gave Rooney Mara's character that line about, like, good luck with your video game, which is designed to tell us that she's stupid and wrong and Zuckerberg is a genius. Like, that's not reflecting the misogyny of the tech bros, because a tech bro didn't say it. You, Aaron Sorkin, put those words in your strong female character's mouth. You wrote that for her to say so that we would think she was dumb. So that's you, Aaron Sorkin, being the misogynist, right? That's not just portraying it in others.
It's not that the men in the movie are misogynistic towards the women. That would be acceptable, defensible, even a good thing. And it would work if any of the women in the movie were portrayed as anything more than literally one dimensional.
Exactly.
And instead, what happens is you have these men being misogynistic towards the female characters, but then you just have the female characters, independently of the male characters or independently of what's happening, being one or multiple of crazy, stupid, vapid, they can't catch things because they're girls. Like, you know, and it I would say, honestly, that the more we've talked about it and watching the movie multiple times over, like, that is, I think, really the thing that shines above all the rest as being so inexcusable in a movie that where the rosebud of the movie is that this one girl dumped him, basically.
Yeah.
Is that, like, I think, you know, in spite of everything else that I said, maybe this movie works if all of the women in the movie, instead of being portrayed how they're portrayed, are portrayed as being smarter than all of the men.
Exactly.
And kinder and more thoughtful and more interesting.
Exactly.
But they're not the focus of it because they're women.
Yeah.
That movie works.
Yep. Uh-huh.
This movie, where all of the women are stupid and annoying, just like all of the men are, but they're portrayed as even being a degree of magnitude more stupid and more annoying, it completely undercuts any point it might be trying to make.
Exactly.
About misogyny. And so that brings me to my final thing that I wanted to point out that I think wraps it all up nicely, which is the scene with Sean Parker and Jesse Eisenberg in the club where the loud music is pounding. And Sean Parker tells the story about the founding of Victoria's Secret. Right? Do you remember that?
Yes. Yes. Yeah.
You know, he talks about Roy Raymond. He talks about his whole thing of, you know, he founds Victoria's Secret because he's like, damn, it's kind of hard to buy lingerie for my wife without it being a whole fucking skeevy thing. Like, what if there was just a store for this?
Yeah.
And you could just go there and it was easy or whatever. And then as the story goes, he is super successful. He makes millions of dollars, sells the company for $4 million to Leslie Wexner. And then Leslie Wexner turns it into fucking Victoria's Secret. It's worth billions of dollars. And Roy Raymond jumps off the Golden Gate Bridge.
Yeah.
And I would add into this that the appearance briefly of Larry Summers and Peter Thiel,
yeah,
as like, especially Peter Thiel being somebody you're not supposed to know at the time.
Yeah.
That yeah. story to me is the perfect encapsulation of this movie because it is a very simple story with a very obvious point that completely ignores the most interesting thing about it, which is Leslie Wexner. Do you know that name, Les Wexner? Is that name, does it ring any bells to you?
No.
Les Wexner is maybe the single largest benefactor of Jeffrey Epstein, famous billionaire pedophile.
Wow. Wow.
And
wait, Jeffrey Epstein, so, the New York financier?
Yeah. That would have been so funny. There's like a scene where it's like, yeah, we're going to take this, we're going to take this plane to this island with this cool guy. You probably haven't heard of him. His name's Jeffrey Epstein.
Man.
He's a New York financier. Yeah, there's no reason why you should have heard of him.
Which, I'm almost surprised the film didn't do that, given the timeline. But anyways,
honestly, yeah. But so I love that scene because it is like kind of the movie in a nutshell, which is like, tell this boring story about business instead of telling the interesting story, which is that all billionaires are pedophiles
and
commit horrible crimes.
Yeah.
And obviously, you know, as I said before, like, I don't think I think you would mostly agree with this too. Like, most of my beefs with this movie aren't really that political in nature. They have a political valence to them because of what it's about.
Mm-hmm.
But the vast majority of my complaints about it really are just that I just think it fails at what it's trying to do. And I think that honestly, the ambition of what it's trying to do is the bar is really not that high. It's not aiming that high.
Yeah.
And I really do think like there is a movie that you could have made about this that would have not only been closer to the truth, but that also would have just been a better movie and would have been less stupid. But that probably would have required it being written by somebody other than Aaron Sorkin.
Yeah. And I think your point dovetails really well with my main criticism too, which is that because it's so poorly written, because the movie is so poorly, fails so terribly at accomplishing, what it's trying to accomplish, that we actually end up with no idea what it's trying to accomplish. But if we generously assume that it was supposed to be a story about, you know, the misogyny in this culture, it fails so miserably at doing that, that it ends up being a piece of misogyny itself. It ends up being, you know, the kind of movie that those reviewers that you were citing earlier, you know, would watch and be like, this just goes to show the tech bros are the new, I don't know what the line was, but like, you know, these are the new cool guys.
Rock stars.
The new rock stars, right?
Yeah.
And it's like, if you made a movie that was supposed to be about how these guys are misogynists and shitty and losers, and you gave people the impression that they were cool and that they were rock stars, then you profoundly failed so badly that I have to assume you didn't even want to achieve that in the first place, but that you yourself also think they are rock stars, which is, I think Aaron Sorkin presents Mark Zuckerberg fundamentally as a rock star in this. Jesse Eisenberg's portrayal of him, well, he does a good job of being petulant and childish at times, he still comes across pretty cool. He's still, you know, if you ask me who's the coolest character in this movie, like just straight up, who's cool? I mean, maybe Sean Parker, but probably
it
Zuck
should
himself.
Be Sean Parker, but
it should be. But it ends really, up being Zuck himself because he's given some great lines. He's given some snappy, cool, some the snappiest and best little quips and moments are given to him. So it's like, yeah, I don't think this was a critique. I don't. It doesn't land as a critique.
Yeah. So, I guess closing on that, and then I'm going to very, very quickly just run through some evidence for our points that we are not the only people who think this. Like, there are people who love this movie who essentially agree. Movie, for as much as whatever it's trying to do, ultimately makes Zuckerberg look not as bad as it should, and even makes him kind of look good. But just before we close out on that, I would just say that basically the movie treats the things about Zuckerberg and about Facebook and about all of these guys that should be what should be the point of the movie becomes more of just a tragic character flaw, the misogyny is there for the same reason that you might make a character an alcoholic or addicted to drugs or, estranged from his wife and kid or something because he's too, a detective who's like too wrapped up in his work to take proper care of his family or whatever, where it's like, these are bad things or they are things that can make you a hard person to get along with. But they are counterbalanced against, things that are laudable, a singular vision or genius or something. And in this movie, they are not treated as the point themselves. They, I think, are treated as there's always a but.
Yeah.
Well, he's an asshole, but.
Yeah.
He's also a genius.
He may not respect women.
He's a misogynist, but.
Yeah, he may not respect women, but, he writes some great code.
Yeah, exactly.
He may think women are all bitches, but, boy, he's got a great idea for how to market a social media platform. Like, sorry, but these things aren't balanced,
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. It's so strange, so much of the post, to 2010's assessment, people just saying how prescient this movie is, and I just think that's so strange. It's so strange, but I do want to talk just at the very end here, as I alluded to before, about some of the responses that this movie got, and I'm honestly just going to go straight from the legacy subsection of the Wikipedia article, because it just perfectly sums up all of the people who liked this movie but felt the exact same way that we did. So I do not want anyone coming at me saying I misunderstood this movie.
Right.
Because, as I said, if it was trying to do something other than this, it failed, and this is proof positive. So Bob Lefsetz, who I mentioned earlier, said in his review of this movie that watching it makes you want to run from the theater, grab your laptop, and build your own empire. This is the same guy who said that techies have become the new rock stars. I mentioned Dave Knox in his review of the movie saying the direct quote is 15 years from now, we might just look back and realize this movie inspired our next great generation of entrepreneurs. Zuckerberg himself was quoted as saying he is interested to see what effect the social network has on entrepreneurship, noting that he gets lots of messages from people who claim that they have been very much inspired to start their own company.
Jesus.
Eduardo Saverin echoed these sentiments, saying that the film may inspire countless others to create and take that leap to start a new business. In one such instance, the co-founders of Wall Street Magnet confirmed that they were inspired to create the fantasy trading community after watching The Social Network. I think that perfectly sums it up.
Yep.
If your movie about the asshole who founded Facebook makes people want to be the asshole who founded Facebook.
Yep.
That is a movie that has had if nothing else, even if you for some reason think like it's good, which I at this point, like by the third rewatch of this, I was genuinely baffled and just completely apathetic towards the movie as like a concept. But if even if you feel strongly about it, I would argue that all of those statements just prove that it has had a completely rancid cultural impact.
Oh, totally.
That alone is enough of a reason to hate it as much
absolutely.
As I do.
You know what it reminds me of? It reminds me of, and I actually don't remember which movie we were reviewing where I said this, but I talked about movies where there's a moralizing message that you're supposed to get from the movie, but most of the film makes the opposite behavior seem fun and cool and funny. You know, like you watch an Adam Sandler movie from, you know, his early era, and it's like,
sure, yeah.
The message of the movie, the moral of the story is don't be a bully. But you spend 75% of the movie laughing your ass off at the incredibly funny ways that Adam Sandler is being a bully. And then at the end, the movie comes back and says, no, but you're not. But bullying is bad. And so you come away from it like, yeah, I know that I was supposed to think bullying is bad. But honestly, the bullying looked super fun and cool. And that's
why Happy Gilmore is the best Adam Sandler movie, because it's the one Adam Sandler movie that has the balls to basically be like, no, this movie is about how Happy Gilmore is cool and good.
Yeah.
And it would be awesome if golfers were like this, because golf is fucking stuffy.
Yeah.
Which is why Happy Gilmore is good. You're absolutely right. I like if this movie is about misogyny being bad, then like, why does it make it seem like that? Like it's cool.
Yeah.
Like the guys who are doing it are cool.
Yeah, exactly.
All right. Any final thoughts before we sign off?
No. I think we've done this turd to death. I'm ready to let's watch something good for next time.
Yes, definitely. We'll do a good movie for next time. Yeah. I have a few ideas, including one that I think would dovetail nicely from this one. So
nice.
In the meantime, thanks for listening, everybody. I said on the last episode that it wouldn't be as long before the next one, so that failed utterly. But I am hoping that it will be less time between this one and the next one, because I'm excited to talk about some good movies.
Yes.
Again, because fuck, like it's way. I don't know why, but it's way harder to talk about bad movies.
I know. It hurts.
It's harder to watch them, but it's sometimes it's harder to talk about them too.
Yeah.
So anyways, thanks for listening to this one. And I guess, you know, please don't send me any death threats or whatever. I know people really like this one.
So weird.
Thanks for listening, guys. We'll see you next time.